So good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Magnolia Public Schools Finance Committee meeting. My name is Jennifer Lara. I'm the Executive Assistant and Board Secretary at Magnolia Public Schools. Before we begin, a couple of brief reminders. First, this meeting is being recorded. Second, if you're a member of the public and you wish to give a public comment during the public comment section of this meeting, you're more than welcome to state your name. If it is something that you feel uncomfortable in doing so, you do not have to state your name. But as a reminder to our committee members and staff, as always, please state your name before giving your comment or your question. And with that, we'll officially open up tonight's meeting. The day is Tuesday, June 21st, 2022, and the time is 5:32 p.m. With that, Dr. Dickbush, if you may please call the meeting to order.
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. With the stated date, I would like to call meeting to order for Finance Committee meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Dickbush. With that, I'll record attendance. Dr. Dickbush?
Here.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov.
Here.
Thank you for that. We have established quorum. Next, we'll move on to the approval of agenda. The motion is to approve the agenda as presented. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
I'll move, Mika.
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov. Thank you, Dr. Dickbush, for seconding. I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The agenda has been approved as presented. Next, we'll move on to public comments. As a reminder, you're given 3 minutes to state your comment. 6 minutes if translation is needed. If there is any members of the public that wish to give a comment, you may unmute yourself now. Perfect. If there's no public comments, we'll move forward with the agenda. Next, with the approval of minutes from the MPS Finance Committee meeting on April 6, 2022. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
I'll move, Mekan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohamedov.
I'll second.
Thank you, Dr. Dickbush, for seconding. I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dickbush?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov?
Yes.
Yes, thank you to our committee members. The minutes for April 6, 2022 has been approved. Now we'll be moving on to the recommended action items, starting with 2A, approval of the 2022 through 23 adopted budgets for all MPS sites and home office management fee policy. This will be presented by Mr. Budraja, our Chief Financial Officer.
Hey. Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you all for joining. I'm going to go ahead and provide an overview of our budget for the upcoming fiscal year for 22-23 that commences July 1. And so, as you all know, we are required to adopt a budget by July 1 of each year and basically have a public board meeting to discuss the details of that budget and submit the information to the state, to county offices, and to our authorizers. And so this is something we do each year. And so I'll be talking about our adopted budget as well as our home office management fee structure during this meeting. And I'll go ahead and begin with our home office management fee structure. And basically what this is this is the way in which we calculate the fees that our home office collects from the school sites. The actual structure has not changed since the past. It's been the same in which we use a formula of ADA. Basically, the school sites are charged on an ADA basis depending on how many students they have enrolled. And so in this example here, all of our school sites pay CML fees to the home office for services that we provide, including human resources, accounting, special ed, technology, HR, management services. And then we also have a structure in which we can bill select school sites based on specific services that we provide, namely facilities. As you know, facilities is become an area that we're paying particular attention to right now because of the fact that our school sites, some of our school sites need a home and a place to a place to house their students, and we're looking into building out facilities in different areas. And so basically in this document, you'll see here all of our sites, with the exception of MSA San Diego, pay a proportionate share based on that fund, that formula. MSA San Diego, that's authorized by San Diego Unified, we pay a cap of 11% on our general purpose funding, which is our LCFF funding. And so in the example, if you just take a look at, we're just using an example of 5,000 students. We know that we have less than that, but this is just for illustrative purposes. If you were to back out the approximately 400 students at San Diego, the remaining number of students, that 4,600 students, would be charged. We would be charging each school equally based on the formula. And so this is what we do periodically. We look at this when we adopt our budget. We also look at it when we close our books, which will be coming up here in August, to take a look to see the revenues that came in by site, and to make sure that each school site is charged appropriately, so that we're able to support our home office. So wanted to share that with you. Any questions on that?
If we can hold off for questions for the whole thing at the end.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry, go ahead. So next I'll go ahead and go into our budget. And this is the important piece that I'd like to get into. And so at the very top there, you can see, this is an important document because we have our projected enrollment by site. And as you can see, each site has a differing enrollment. The total there is 3,804 is what we're projecting for next year for 22-23. And it's based on conversations that we've had with our site principals, with staff, with our external officer of communications, taking a look to see realistically what we can anticipate in terms of our enrollment, which would lead into, ADA as well on the bottom there. So for example, MSA 1, you see 730 projected to be enrolled. The capacity at that site is 925. Their unduplicated number of students is 621, which is about 85%. So 85% of their students fall under one of those categories, whether they be free and reduced price lunch, English language learners, or foster care youth. So given that we're anticipating 96% enrollment to ADA, we're expecting to have approximately 701, call it, ADA for MSA 1. And so the revenues there, I'll kind of give you a breakdown and provide you a brief overview of each revenue component and give you some information on what the changes were from the last time we discussed the budget. The LCFF revenue in this example for MSA 1 is projected to be approximately $9.73 million, and this includes a 6.56% cost of living adjustment. This includes some increases in the base grants that were provided during the governor's May revise. It also includes some additional funding for supplemental and concentration grant funding. And so with all of that, our LCFF revenues, which is our largest source of funding, is projected to be $9.7 million. Federal revenues, which include Title I, Title II, Title III, and all those entitlement funding, those are projected to be approximately $1.05 million. Other state revenues, in which in this case, we, in this particular year, we're getting quite a bit of additional other state revenues. And some of those include discretionary block grant. The state's giving out anywhere between $1,300 to $1,350 approximately in per ADA, I should say, in discretionary block grant money. So that's been included in there. There's A to G money for college readiness. There's money for SB. Some of the sites are getting SB 140, 740 money, that's for facilities. We have a couple of sites that are getting universal TK. For example, MSA 7 and MSA Santa Ana are getting some money for TK. So there's a lot of miscellaneous other state revenue, and you can kind of see that on each of the sites. In this example, MSA 1 is projected to receive $3.8 million in other state revenues for next year. And so the other local revenue basically consists of fundraising and some other miscellaneous sources, and totaling out about $14.83 million in revenues. Now, this is offset by our expenditures. We're looking at $4.65 million worth of expenditures for certificated salaries for MSA 1. And that includes the base. We know that the school increased its base for certificated staff to $57,000 for certificated staff, and that's been incorporated in the projections there. We also provided an increase for classified salaries at 8%, and that's also been included in here at the $1.34 million number there. We know that costs for employee benefits are rising, particularly STIRS and PERS. So those adjustments have been included, the rate increases to both the STIRS and PERS, totaling out to about a little over $2 million in the case of MSA 1. Our expenditures for books and supplies are included based on the need of the sites at a little over $600,000. And then we have services and other operating, which includes all kinds of different contracted services, such as special ed services, sub-services, leases, rentals, payments for facilities, CMO fees. Those are all incorporated in that services and other operating expenses. And then we also have some money budgeted for facilities, capital outlay at $518,000. All said, the school is projecting a surplus of approximately $935,000. Currently, so it looks like given all the staffing and the additional compensation that we've been able to provide and looking at the needs of the site, we're still able to operate in the black, which is obviously a good thing. And so leaving MSA 1 a net income of $934,892, and then adding to their projected ending fund balance of, which is now projected to be $10,628,000. $743 for the year ending June 30th, 2023. So sufficient reserves. You can see there that each site is able to project revenues that exceed the expenditures. So each site is able to project a surplus, some greater than others, as we know that each site is different in terms of their enrollment. And so they each have their own unique situation. So you can see there, each of the school sites are projected to be operating in the black, which is good. We'd like to be able to obviously continue to support our school sites, our students, and do it in a manner that allows us to be fiscally solvent and to be able to maintain our reserves. You can see there, in total, with all the schools combined, all 10 schools, we are projecting $77.3 million worth of revenues, offset by $73.7 million worth of expenditures, allowing for in total of approximately $3.7 million in excess in net income for the 10 schools collectively. So given that, and then our current fund balance of $45 million, we're looking at a projected ending fund balance of $48.9 million for the year ending 2022-23, which would be June 30th of next year. So all in all, you can see the numbers there. And then we also have a breakdown of employee counts by site. We have certificated head counts there, a total of 219 certificated teachers. We've got some other pupil support services there, 239. We have classified staff. We have a lot of other additional staff, including administrative. So that totals out to about 468 full-time staff. And so there has been some growth there. And so that's where we're looking in terms of our personnel and then our total revenues and expenditures. If we could please go down to the next line. And so here I want to share with you some good data that we've been able to aggregate. And this has to do with the average salary by site. And so you can see there that MSA 1, the average salary for certificated teachers is $72,707 exactly. And then so about $76,000 on average for MSA 2. MSA 3 is looking closer to $77,800, if you're rounding, close to $69,400 approximately MSA 4. And then MSA 5, we're at $74,549, approximately $75,000 at MSA 6, MSA 7, $72,000 and some change. And then similarly with MSA 8, and then $75,000, $74,000 with MSA Santa Ana and San Diego, respectively. And that totals out to an average of $74,234. That's what we pay our certificated staff, based on the increase. Each of the sites now has a base amount of $57,000 for certificated staff. We obviously want to be competitive, and we want to be able to retain good teachers and be able to provide good educational program. And so we're actually able to support our staff and compensate them accordingly. We've got an average certificated pupil support salary of about $80,400. You can see there on the top right-hand corner, the average admin salary is about $106,524. The classified average is about a little over $63,000. So you can see kind of a breakdown of what we're compensating on average by site. I think this is good data that you know, we really want to be able to use. We're really leaning towards using good data to drive decision-making at all the sites to see, you know, where we are in terms of staffing and what the need is and all that sort of thing. And you can see below that, there's a student staffing ratio number there. And that's the number of students per certificated employee. It's almost very similar to, teacher student, you know, class sizes. So for MSA 1, we're looking at 14.6, the number of students for every certificated teacher. A certificated teacher right there. And then you see 17.9 for MSA 2, 15.8 for MSA 3, MSA 1, a little bit less at 10.7, and then 15.5 at MSA 5, MSA 6 being at 23.4, and so on. MSA 8, 14.3, Santa Ana, 13.6, San Diego, 23.2. The average number of students per FTE is close to 16. And so you can see there, and the average number of students per admin is 99, close to 100 there. And then you can see a little bit less relevant, but still important nonetheless. We have approximately 21 classified 21 students per every classified staff member, and then number of students per FTE. So if you look at collectively by school site, there's one adult, you know, teacher, staff member, whatever you want to call it, present for every 8.1 students at each of the sites on average. And then if you look at the right there below, you can see the expense per object category. So the first line is the total personnel cost. We know that the bulk of the budget consists of personnel costs. That's certificated salaries, classified salaries, employee benefits. That generally accounts for about 2/3 of the budget. And here we have lower ranges and higher ranges. MSA 1, you see it's 58%, 62% at MSA 2, approximately 67%. So basically two-thirds for MSA 3, two out of every $3 spent on personnel costs. Higher on MSA 4, it's like 3/4 at 74%. 70% MSA 5, 67%. Similarly, MSA 5 and MSA 3, very much similar. MSA 6 and MSA 3, very much similar at 67%. And then MSA 7 on the lower end, 53%, and 66% MSA 8, and then 60 and 58% for the last two schools. So we're averaging about 63% of total budget being spent on personnel costs. And You can see book supplies there, generally a smaller slice of the budget. The sites have a fairly significant amount of material supplies. They don't, relative to the size of their budget, there's not a significant amount spent in these categories, and they include things like textbooks, office supplies, and other items. Services and other operating, as I mentioned, those areas that includes rentals and leases, contracted services, regular expenses, communications, utilities, all that sort of thing is lumped into services. And the total there on average is about 30%. And so you can see that kind of gives you a nice breakdown of what each school site spends on what line items. Some sites obviously have more expenses towards personnel. Some have more expenses geared towards services and other operating. They contract out more often for things like substitute teachers and maybe security guards and things like that. So it all is a little different depending on the site, the geography, the demographics, and lots of different factors. And just below that, I wanted to provide a compensation breakdown. I'm sorry, if you can just stop, please, Jen, if you please just go back up. So this here is basically the average increase from year over year. So if you compare the current year, 21-22, to what we're projecting for next year, this is the percentage increase that we're anticipating. So for MSA1, we're looking at 6%. MSA2, 6%, MSA3, it's 10%, it's 6%. Also for MSA4, we're looking similarly for MSA5. Now, MSA6, it's higher, it's 17%. They're on the higher side, and I'll kind of share with you some additional details on this because there's a little bit more to these numbers. If you look a little closer, and so 11% MSA 7, 11% MSA 8, San Diego, 15% increase, and then 12% Santa Ana. And we have to keep in mind that during the current school year, we did have a pretty fair amount of turnover with staff. We've had some school sites have a significant number of staff that have left for whatever reason, teachers moving. And so having to backfill those positions sometimes can result in that average teacher salary being lower. So there's other factors that have to come into play with the average salaries, not just a base increase. It has to do with the amount of time a particular teacher has been with Magnolia. It has to do with their credentials, their qualifications, how many years of experience they have. So all of those factors come into play when you take a look at the increase from year over year. So I did want to share this information. I thought it would be useful for the board to look at, to get an idea of where we are in terms of compensation. And so if we go down, please, Jennifer. So this is a consolidated, and so this is actually good information because it provides a sort of a historical context going back to about 3 years now, 4 years. So 18-19, that's the fiscal year of 18-19. This is actuals data. So 18-19, 19-20, as well as 2021 is actuals data. The books are closed. These are real numbers. They're not going to change. The 2022, I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. It's just because it's a year to date. We're still, today's June 21st. We've not yet closed out the fiscal year. And we obviously haven't even begun fully to do our year-end closing. And that takes about, approximately 45 days or sometimes longer. And so the year-to-date numbers are obviously going to change. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. It's just in actuals. And so you can see there on the enrollment piece where we were at 3,957 back in 18-19, we were close to 4,000 students. And we dropped off a little bit the following year into 19-20 from 3,957 to closer to 3,891, about 3,900 call it. And then another little more minor drop. And then we saw a more significant drop for the current year. But we are anticipating growth for next year. So the projections for next year are 3804, as I mentioned. So this is kind of the overall trend that you can see where we were close to, we were 3950, close to 4,000. We maintained. And then obviously with the pandemic and lots of different factors, we dropped off, particularly in the current year. If you can see the difference between the 3862 and the 3648, but I believe we are making some significant advances towards recruitment and marketing and outreach so that we can get those students back. And you can see our top line there, overall revenues back in 2018-19 were close to 56 million and similarly 56 million in the following year. And then we increased, you know, during the pandemic 2020-2021, our total revenues increased by about 10 million. And then, as I mentioned, not to pay too much attention, we're anticipating similar to the 2020-21, I should say. So obviously we haven't closed the year yet, but we are anticipating significant revenues in the next fiscal year in 22-23. As I mentioned, a lot of that has to do with the increases to the cost of living, the base grant increases, additional monies in the form of block grants, you know, A to G, ELOG, ELOP, other discretionary block grants. So we're looking at about 77.4 million for next year, offset by about 73.7. As I had mentioned previously, still allowing us to have a projected surplus of close to 3.7 million for the next year. But you can see in past years there, the trend where if you go back to 18-19, we pretty much had close to a balanced budget with a almost $56 million worth of revenues offset by a similar amount in our expenses, resulting in a small surplus there of $123,000. And then a larger surplus in the following year of 1.9 million. And then, you know, obviously a more significant surplus in 2020-2021 with the one-time funding and all of that sort of thing. So we were able to carry over those fund balances and be able to do some things that we needed to do and we wanted to do, obviously, in terms of compensation, investments in facilities and other areas. And so overall, we're looking at a projected ending fund balance for next fiscal year of $48.9 million and a significant reserve for economic uncertainty. As you see there, 66.33% is our REU, our reserve for economic uncertainty. And if you could please go down. And so, yeah, these are just the totals again, on average, what we pay. Similar information is what I had shared. And this is all just basically information regarding compensation. You go down, please. Yeah. And then this is a breakdown by site. And you can see, you know, two of our sites, MSA 1 and 2, actually experienced growth during the pandemic. They were actually increasing. They went from 590 to 650. Up to 710, so they've actually added students in over the last, you know, 3 years. MSA 1 and MSA 2 have actually grown, and then the other school sites have experienced decline, particularly MSA 4 and 6. We've had some declines, and we know there's various reasons for those, and I'll kind of just go over this with you, just top line, and just go by site and just share with you. So what we're looking at, you can see in the past, MSA 1 had a balanced budget back in 18-19 with a healthier surplus in the following year in 19-20, and then a nice substantial surplus of about 2.7 million in 2020-2021. We are expecting a surplus again in the current year, but again, I wouldn't pay too much attention to the actuals. We're still at the tail end. We haven't closed out the year, and so these numbers are definitely going to be changing. And so this is where we are with MSA 1, projecting a overall net revenues of 934,000, as I had shared with you before. if we could please go down to MSA2, you can go ahead and skip there. Yeah, there we go. So here's MSA2, here's the trend, very similar to MSA1 in the sense that they've experienced growth. 437 students enrolled back in 18-19, sort of flat in those 2 years, but a nice bump up in 2020, 2021. They added in about 30 students close to, and then similarly, they've added students this year. And so we're anticipating 513 enrolled for next fiscal year. And all signs point to the school should be able to achieve that goal. Total revenues of $9.26 million are offset by approximately $8.34 million worth of expenditures, allowing the school to project a net income or surplus of $928,000. And if we go down there, you can see, this is their headcounts, and then they obviously have a significant ending fund balance of $4.72 million, healthy reserves, which is obviously a good thing. And so next I'll go ahead, move on to MSA3. Now here you have a little bit different trend, whereas back in 18-19, there were approximately 510 students enrolled. That number decreased slightly in the following year. And then when we got into 2020, 2021, obviously a significant, fairly substantial loss of about 80 kids from those 2 years, from 1920 into 2020-21, and then another more slight drop in the current year. But the school is anticipating additional students. They're getting packets out, and they're anticipating being able to step up their recruitment efforts. And so, as a result, projecting 413, a little bit of a growth there from the current year, based on what we're seeing. Their overall budget, $7.45 million worth of revenues, offset by about $7.35 million worth of expenditures, with a projected net income of about $102,000, very close to a balanced budget. They've had to really carefully identify their expenditures and budget carefully. And we really look at these things when we work with the site principals to make sure that the resources are aligned with the funds that we have available. And so here we're projecting a ending fund balance of $2.5 million for June 30th of 2023. Now, if we can go, this is MSA4. Now we know that this school, at one time we had 176 students enrolled. There was a drop off in the following year to 131, and then another drop off into 2020-2021, the beginning of pandemic year. And then currently they're about 109 enrolled. We're anticipating that be relatively flat with a little bit of modest growth. So we're projecting 115 enrolled for MSA4, and similar to the one that I'd shared previously, very close to just a balanced budget where you've got $2.47 million worth of revenues offset by about $2.41 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a slight surplus of about $67,000. So not deficit spending, no deficit spending that we're projecting, and we're projecting a balanced budget and an ending fund balance of $1.33 million, as you can see there. Not as high as some of the other schools, but obviously a smaller pool, less students, but still sufficient for the school site. Now, if we can go please to MSA5, okay. So now here we have the numbers that you see here. If you look at the top right-hand corner, 250 projected to be enrolled for next year. And if you look back to 18-19, they were at 248. So they grew to 281, up to 290, and then enrollment kind of dropped off a little bit there in the current year. Current year is at 239. And so we expect to reverse that trend of dropping off over the last few years. And we expect a little bit of a pickup, about 11 students there, but we do expect a bit of a pickup nonetheless. And here you've got $5.1 million worth of revenues offset by $4.2 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a net income of about $904,000, call it, just around. And so nice, healthy surplus at the end of the year we're projecting, and an ending fund balance of close to $4.5 million. So that's certainly a good thing, being able to have sufficient ending fund balances, surplus rather than a deficit, and healthy reserves. And now, so here we have MSA 6, similarly to MSA 4, in the sense they, 156 enrolled back in 1819, a drop off in the following year to 134, and then an uptick in the pandemic year to 2020-21, we're up to 163. And then obviously with this school, they had some issues as it relates to facilities, and it's never easy to relocate students to a different school, and they had to deal with some significant challenges. And you can see there that enrollment dropping from 163 to 85 really can be a challenge. Getting students, families to be able to move sites is not easy. And so, but they're able to manage current year. They're got a projected balanced budget with about $45,000 left over. And then into next fiscal year, we've got $2.17 million worth of revenues, offset by about $2.08 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a surplus of about $91,000. And then again, that additional projected surplus would add to the fund balance, allowing for the school to project a $2.58 million ending fund balance effect for June 30th, 2023. So healthy reserves and a balanced budget. So that's obviously a good thing. So let's go ahead and move to MSA 7 Northridge. And here, you've got very, very stable enrollment. You can see here, we're projecting out 300. That's the capacity for the school. They're capped out over there at MSA 7. And so they were at 291 back in 1819, pretty much flat the following year to 292. And then similarly the following year, just modest incremental growth, a little bit of a drop off in the current year, not too significant, and then projecting an uptick next year. So really going from 291 back over to 300, very stable enrollment. We're looking at $5.9 million worth of projected revenues for next year, offset by about $5.66 million worth of expenditures, about a $250,000 surplus at the end of the year, and healthy reserves ending fund balance. We're looking at $2.9 million projected for the end of next fiscal year. Now, if we could go to MSA Bell. So here, we started out back in 1819 at 471 students enrolled, with a little bit of incremental growth in the following year to 482. And then, a drop off in pandemic year 2020-2021, drop off from 482 to 440. And then we experienced another drop off in the current year to 385. And so we're anticipating that it remain relatively flat with some modest growth. So we're projecting 400 for next fiscal year. And with all of the funding and the different sources of funding that I described to you, we're projecting $7.11 million worth of revenues, offset by about $7.05 million worth of expenditures, allowing the school to project a surplus of about $61,000, call it, just to round up. And again, increasing their ending fund balance and allowing the school to project $6.45 million worth of ending fund balance. And so you've got a reserve for economic uncertainty of 91%, substantial. So in a good position there with fund balance as well. Now, if we could please go over to, so this is MSA Santa Ana. Now keep in mind all of this data that I've shared with you, all the school sites are at a $57,000 base for certificated staff, and all of those numbers have been included in these projections. So I just wanna remind remind everyone of that. So for Santa Ana, we're projecting 520 for the next fiscal year. The overall trend, they were at 674 back in 1819 and experienced some decline in the following year, going down to 546 into 1920, and then a slight drop into the subsequent year to 2020-2021 from 546 to 543, and then a further decline in the current year down by 40 if you take a look at the overall trend. And so we're anticipating that they can reverse that trend and add some students into next year, going from 503 to 520 into next fiscal year. Overall, a pretty good sized budget, you know, for this school, having a large breadth of students in all different grades. We are projecting $10.7 million worth of revenues. This particular school is actually projected to receive a universal TK block grant of about $75,000, and that's similar to MSA 7. So that's been included in there. So some of these one-time sources of funding are certainly helping in terms of budget. You can see the other state revenues at $2.4 million. That includes A to G funds, discretionary block grant funding. That includes the universal TK. So there's a lot of good sources of one-time revenue that are being incorporated in there. And so for Santa Ana, we're projecting $10.7 million worth of revenues, offset by about $10.56 million worth of expenditures, allowing for a projected surplus of about $152,000 and some change there. You can see close to $153,000. And again, sufficient ending fund balances. We had a projected beginning balance of $9.14 million, and then adding in that projected surplus, we're looking at closing out next year at about $9.3 million. So again, you know, a balanced budget, healthy reserves, and being able to meet their obligations. And we know that this school obviously has had some we're adding to facilities and doing all sorts of things there. So hopefully that can help to potentially add students in areas we maybe may not have anticipated. And so moving on to MSA San Diego. So here you can see a trend of 400 and above for the overall last 3 years or so. So projecting 416 for next year. They were at 404 back in 1819. They experienced some growth in the following year of close to 40 in 1920, and then just remained flat into the pandemic into from 443 to 441, with a small drop off in the current year by about 20 kids. And so still projecting to have very similar to current year ADA, with possibly a slight decline just by about five or so, not so substantial. And their overall revenues, we have to remember that MSA San Diego is very different from the other schools in the sense that they don't receive a significant amount of supplemental or concentration grant funding. And so what helped this school was really additional base funding that all the schools got. Because of that added base, they were able to project some additional LCFF revenue, that along with the cost of living increase. Those really help the school because they just don't get as much per kid as some of the other schools. They average somewhere between 12 to 13,000 students per kid, and some of our other schools average 19, 20,000. So they receive a lot less per ADA than the other nine schools just because of their unduplicated count. So being able to maintain their enrollment, you can see maintain expenditures accordingly. We're at $5.93 million worth of revenues and about $5.74 million worth of expenses, still allowing for a projected surplus of $192,000. And then still being able to maintain a reserve and projecting a $1.4 million ending fund balance for June of 2023.
Steve, real quick, this is Alfredo. Hello, everyone. Good evening. Hopefully everyone is doing well. So there is a typo here with San Diego. It should be for 22-23 July budget, fiscal year 20. It should be 443. And we did identify 443 in the summary page at the beginning. So that should be 443. But the revenue and expenses are correct, but it should be 443.
Oh, okay, good catch. I probably used a previous figure, but if they're anticipating additional growth, then obviously then that's a good thing. That'd be an additional 20 some odd students from the current year. So thank you for catching that, Alfredo. As I had mentioned, so projecting an ending fund balance, which is sufficient. And obviously if they're able to get those additional students, you'd be able to see a higher amount there, probably closer to 1.7, 1.8 million. If that enrollment, obviously if we get that to materialize. And finally, I'm gonna go to the last one, the home office. If you could just please scroll down. Now this is our home office. Now, obviously here, no enrollment. We don't directly serve any students. We don't receive any LCFF dollars. Our main source of funding is other local revenues, which is the CMO fees that we collect from school sites. And so our budget, you can see there, the trend line at 5.8 million worth of revenues, and then a drop off in the following year down to closer to 5.2, and then back up into the pandemic year of 5.9, very close. Those 2 years, 18, 19, and 2021, very similar in terms of the amount of revenues. As I mentioned, don't pay too much attention to 22 because that's just an actuals, and we're not done with the year yet. But based on all of the expenses that we've identified, all of the current staffing, and taking a look at some of the needs that we have to help support our students, we're projecting 6.37 million worth of revenues. And we obviously want to stay within that and be within a balanced budget. And so our projected expenses are in sync with our projected revenues. And so we want to be able to maintain a balanced budget for next year, as you can see there. And we do have a projected ending fund balance of $2.5 million there for the home office. So that's what I have for you. And I'm gonna go ahead and turn it back over to Jennifer.
Thank you, Steve. Is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, committee members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Thank you, Steve, for putting this together and presenting it. Actuals, you said it's not up to date. Like percentage-wise, how much of it is not up to date? If you could give a number. I'm having a hard time trying to understand, like 4 million in revenue for central office and projecting 2.3 million more than what I see. So I'm having a hard time just to let you know.
Yeah,
and I hope you understand, because I'm not being able to ask question because $2.3 million difference, I'm trying to see where that difference is gonna come from.
And as I mentioned, those are actuals, and when we close out the year, we have some programs that it takes about 6 months for us to get our money, and so when we begin the year end
central office, like it's just the student revenues, right? There's nothing else there.
Right, and we still have work to do in terms of identifying what revenues we're capturing, when we're capturing them. So I'll tell you that our home office currently, I wanna say it's about, our operating budget is closer to what it was in last fiscal year, that the actuals year of 2020, 2021, probably slightly higher than that. So these are just kind of based on a cash basis on what we've collected. There's a lot of back-end accounting that's involved, and that's why, and we haven't fully done all of that accounting yet, because we've been kind of working on the budget, and we're going to obviously get to that accounting as we get into year-end closing. So that's why I kind of caution to not put too much emphasis on that. It's just an actual, it's those numbers.
No, absolutely. And I'm very much aware of it. It's just trying to make comparison to what we project and what we've done so far. And if we are here trying to approve the next year, previous year is a good guidance, at least for me. I want to draw attention to, MSA 4 and MSA 6, I understand the facilities is a big item there, and it's really hard to say what's going on. But if we continue in this trend for two more years, we're just going to deplete our reserves there. So that's given, and that's the holistic issue that we all have. But what surprises me is MSA 3. Did you notice?
We can go, I'm going to go back to that, but just to answer your first question, Makan, we do our expense transfers quarterly, and so we haven't done our quarterly transfer yet. So there's a big lump sum of money that's not been included in 2022. So that I wanted to answer your first question. So because of those quarterly transfers, that's why you'll see a huge difference there. Once that quarterly transfer is done, you'll see more of an accurate picture. But I want to go to
for the central office, right, Steve?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Because I remember last year we approved like a transfers, like approved it at the board level that each school would make their payments to the central office. We actually approved it. Harun, I believe you were there. I'm not sure if it was before Steve or after Steve. So if we're stuck to those payments, I mean, we should be pretty actual. So I guess we didn't stick to those payments.
I think it has to do with some additional accounting work that we've not been, that's just currently not up to date, because we've had some, unfortunately, we've had some we're working with a back office who does, who supports us in some accounting functions, and there's been some turnover there. We've got some new folks. I don't know if you recall Mr. Matthew Lemos. He was would be on during our board meetings, and he was with our back office funding. So with the transition, there's been some of that work that's been a little bit delayed. So I did want you to know this has to do with just intercompany transfers that are currently being looked at and just were not finalized by the time we were able to put this together.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So thank you for that, Steve. The MSA 3, what I'm trying to understand also is the student projected numbers for 2023, fiscal year 23, 413, we are on par with it, right? That's correct number?
So I'll answer the enrollment-based questions, and then on Thursday, Dr. Lopez will be here. So for MSA 3, where you see fiscal year 2022, the 399 number, they actually started with 412 students. So they've lost these 13 students from the beginning. So these are actual numbers. And in terms of how we see them right now, they do have quite a bit of work to go, but they're actually projecting pretty well so far compared to last year. So what Dr. Lopez will share is that last year they were about 30 packets at this moment, completed packets. This year they're at 43. So that's a 13 packet increase. And then in terms of how many they need, they still need another 50. And that is relatively high, but MSA 3 historically has had a lot of parents sign on towards the months of July and August. They're one of the schools that does wait, but they also have 38 current families that are in the process of submitting packets. So we're assuming those 38 would go through. So then they would need anywhere from 12 to another 22 just to be safe. But they are trending pretty well right now to meet the 413 number. I'm confident that they're gonna be very close to it as they were last year. They did have a large number of seniors graduate. So it was one of their larger classes of 50. So right now, obviously they're at 43. And then I think the other piece here is that in terms of students returning for next year, historically MSA 3 has had a challenge retaining close to the 90, 93, 95 compared to some of the other schools. But this year, because of the work of Dr. Lopez, the PACE, the school sites, we're only projecting 14 students not to return, which is about 15 to 20 students better than they've done historically. So we're expecting student retention to go up better than they did last year. They're trending better than last year by 13 enrollment packets. And they do have 38 families currently in the process of completing their enrollments. So that gives us a good sense that they will be very close to that 413 or meet it.
Okay, thank you.
And then from a historical perspective, we did notice quite a bit of families did move out from the areas that they serve. And that was also solidified by the census data from 2010 to 2020. Unfortunately, quite a bit of families did move out of the area. So the goal right now is to re-engage a lot of the sixth grade families across the communities, inclusive of the Curtis Middle School there, which has anywhere from, you know, they've also dropped enrollment, 390 to 410 middle school students. So I don't project we'll ever get back to the 510, 497, but I think with the right efforts and the right attitude and good programming, I think we can reach the 430, 440 mark. Again.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, Alfredo. Yeah, it just drew my attention very much to the point where MSA 3, and again, Steve, I look at the numbers and actuals, of course, if not all of the revenue is in there, yeah, it could misguide. So we would have like final numbers by when? By August, when you guys are doing the interim?
August, when we close out the year, when we do year-end closing. So I'm anticipating by probably the middle of August or possibly even the first week of August.
Okay, okay.
And I think, Steve, I think you can mention that on Thursday when the board, the full board receives these reports, they're going to receive this one, but also the DMS version, right?
Yes.
That will have the estimates of what we expect for, you know, the end of this year, right, with the estimate. So to Makan's point that he could with ease be able to say, oh, all the schools are going to have net income based on some of these projections. So I think that's the piece that you would like to mention for him, especially as he's dissecting that last row.
Yeah,
fiscal year 2022, and it's not all aligning.
to your point, Makan, I think you're definitely, I can tell that you probably know this fairly well. And yeah, we have a full report with estimated actuals. It's a DMS copy. And as I mentioned, we're going to have that for our full board. I believe it's probably already up. But we did have a little bit of, we had to kind of go through a little bit of a challenge with, you know, just because of the personnel changes. And so getting that document compiled in a timely manner was a little bit beyond our schedule, unfortunately, this year, but I don't anticipate that to happen again. So we're just kind of in a transition with their team, but we're gonna have a full DMS report for you on Thursday.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, let's delve into it then on Thursday. I'll just top down to the student staff ratio. Thank you for putting this together, helps a lot. And I wanna point out San Diego, what they're doing with their certificated students. You know, certificate employees per students ratio. It's pretty good for whatever they do.
San Diego, Jen, please.
I'm looking at the fourth page, I believe, of the report.
Where okay.
Consolidated.
The top line. Jennifer, if you could please go up to the top, like the consolidated.
Give me 1 second.
Sorry.
And then, well, before, I did want to remind that we do have another committee at 6:35, so just to put it out there.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. So how do we compare to other similar CMOs? Or it's a little bit in the bottom. Oh, hold on. Not this page, Jennifer. Above this one. So if you go good one above, right here. Thank you. So, yeah. Like, how do we compare in terms of the ratios? Did you guys get a chance to compare how we're doing, or if there is any standard that we are deviating from or pretty close to? Or
you know, generally, you'll have higher class sizes in grades 4 through 6, 7, 8. And then in high school, you'll tend to have it'll vary in high school because select program, for example, like chemistry or physics or something like that, you may not have higher class sizes because of you know, just the specificity of the programs. The lower grades, you would anticipate seeing lower class sizes, you know, K through three, you know, about class size reduction and wanting to keep those. So like for MSA 7, for example, 17.6, that's about within range, you know, the cap on K-3 class size reduction is about 24-1. So they've got good, a nice healthy number of teachers per kid. And so like in your case, when we talked about San Diego, 23.2, that sounds about right for a school that serves, you know, middle school kids. So it really depends on grade span, the programs that you're offering and what you're providing. It will vary, and then it'll vary based on other circumstances too. Like if your enrollment, you know, is low, then you're going to want to really carefully evaluate. Like MSA 6, for example, 23.4. That's an optimal number of teacher-student ratio. So you're not overstaffed, you're not understaffed. So you really want to look at that. Obviously, the lower that number, the more personnel that you have to serve less students.
Right. And to your first question, this is Alfredo Macan. Right now, either through Ed Data or DataQuest, which is through the CDE, we don't have that level of data where they publish this and make it live. So what we've started to do is A, highlight it, review it with the schools, and then try to get a sense from what we see from the large districts, what they have, specifically LAUSD, to see if this is on par with them, how different is it. But ultimately, we do have a subscription, and then Steve's well connected to School Services of California. So in the future, we do hope to get that data to be able to look at you know, larger districts, but also CMO level data to see where we rank in terms of all these ratios, because they are important. In terms of how many bodies of caring adults you have per student, whether it's a college counselor or it's a paraprofessional. So that's what we're trying to inquire right now. But right now there's a focus on an awareness with the schools, and Steve and his team have done a good job to run these data points to be able to make that awareness happen. And then moving forward, the comparison and analysis and then adjustments will be needed.
Okay, got it. So Thursday we will have much more a corrected version for the actuals, I'm assuming.
The estimated actuals.
Thank you for that. Yeah, Dr. Deepash, did you have, I'm good for now.
Yeah, I have some couple of questions. First of all, yeah, thanks Steve for the detailed report and the presentation. I think right now we quadrupled the allocated time. Like we estimated 15 minutes, but it's more than 1 hour now. I'm hoping the correlation between the estimate and actual in the budget will be essentially not as correlated as we are projecting the time. I think one thing I want to make just high level comments is for the sake of time. I think in terms of budgeting, reporting, I think we should look for ways to improve our reporting or financial responsibility so that not only we can see as an organization, but also each school also. To give an example, for example, how we are calculating the CMO fees, for example, I think it'll be great to have it on the, table so that we can see for each school, like San Diego is 11%, yeah, but for the others, like it's not as clear to see in the tables for other schools. And also, I think it'll be great to have kind of breakdown, hey, for which service are we doing it, instead of just rough calculation, hey, based on ADA, this is just, 8%, 10%, that's it. I think what it will help is maybe in some way it might be helping us to, as an organization, to financially make sure that yes, we are essentially, if we are seeing some wave so that we can maneuver, I think in the short term, yeah, that might be helping. But in the long term, it might be kind of hurting us, not seeing if there's some, I don't know, systematic problem with some school. We constantly may be covering it, but that's not a good thing to do. So because of that, I'm kind of recommending to have, I don't know what the answer is, but if we look with the fresh eyes, like, hey, how can we improve reporting and transparency and financial responsibility, not for the whole organization, for your school, what do we have to modify? Like repeating the same thing from last year, 2 years, 3 years back, I think that shouldn't be our attitude. Always look for improvement. And in here also, I feel that there is room for improvement. That's what I wanted to provide as a general comment.
Thank you, Dr. Dikmish. That's a very good point. And I think that we can always find ways to improve processes and provide better data. I've got a nice a table that I can share with you that I'll bring forward on Thursday that has an outline of all the CMO fee by school and what additional costs and specific to which program. So I think that visual will certainly help you a lot. And I'll be happy to bring that over on Thursday and share that with you. Those numbers are baked in here, but I think we'd probably have to spend more time to sit there and go through. But I have a nice visual of what you're referring to, and I'll be sure to bring that forward and share that with this group.
Okay, yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
And to add, this is Alfredo. Yes, all the things that you mentioned, Dr. Dikmish, are things that we're fully aware of in terms of, I've worked with the other LACEP schools and I understand fully what they charge their schools in terms of a base fee. I also understand as a CMO when you should keep sustainability for schools. There has to be a specific enrollment met. And we have gone against the grain there in terms of our schools, less than 300 students. So there's a lot of metrics that you're talking about that we need to then implement moving forward that I think will help again with equity and then just full transparency. So I'll work with Steve on that to be able to do that moving forward. And to Makan's first point about 4 and 6, there definitely has to be an action plan. And we do have one for us to meet a specific metric. And if we don't, then we do have to revert back to what we're seeing out there in the market in terms of schools, sustainable schools, academically, business-wise. So I'll work with Steve to be able to bring that to the board moving forward. And
thank
then
you.
I would recommend, again, since we are going to provide you a different budget with more info, this one has quite a bit of historical trends, which I did want the finance committee to see how we look from a historical perspective. And we actually brought this as well to you last year, the same analysis. So I wanted to do that, but staff is fine for you guys not to recommend approval for right now until we bring the whole packet to you for Thursday. And then at that time, we'll go through a much more succinct presentation and then you guys could approve that. So we're fine with us having you not make a recommendation to approval, given we're still going to send you the full report.
I think that sounds good.
Okay.
So do we have to make a motion to officially kind of table it so that we can discuss it later?
Jan, lead us.
Sorry, what was the question?
Do we have to do a motion to table it?
You can motion to table it if that's the committee's recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me go back.
I think either we will vote it and reject it or, yeah, let's just table it so that
it's table it.
Because right now there's missing data. That's why we are kind of saying, hey, it's not fair. Let's wait.
Yes.
We appreciate that. Yeah, you presented whatever you have. And we understand, like, it's kind of end of the year. There are so many changes. So, yeah, I'm making the motion to table the item since there are some pending items that will be included in the budget.
Got it. And just to clarify, Dr. Dikmish, it will be tabling the item for the finance committee, but still leaving it on for the board meeting.
Okay, so in that case, like, can we then cancel the discussion? Because if we are going to be discussing in the next finance meeting, we'll be already discussed in the regular board meeting, so there won't be any, I guess, point in tabling then. I don't know. What is the proper way then?
So that I'm trying to get the idea if the committee wants to table it to be discussed at a next finance committee meeting or
No, I think it will be discussed in the full board meeting. Yeah, we're not tabling for the next finance meeting. We are saying it will be the items. I think, as Alfredo and Steve said, they will be completed by the next board meeting. So we are tabling to be discussed in the full board meeting.
Okay.
Yes, tabled to be discussed at the full board meeting with a comprehensive report, which the team has. And the other additional context I would add here is that right now, although the projections are nice and healthy, the uncertainty around the funds has also made our authorizer, LAUSD, also have a second budget meeting, which they're scheduled for August 23. We're not going to have a second budget meeting. We're good with our comprehensive report, and that's what we'll do. But crazy times out there, but the good thing is that the revenue projections are good. All right, Jen, tell us what we need to do so we could follow through on the motion.
Ready for that?
It's okay. I just said to tell us what we need to do on the motion. So then Dr. Yes. Dikpash can take it and then Makan can second it.
Yeah, I believe the finance committee.
Sorry for that. All righty. So as Dr. Dikpash mentioned, he made the motion to table the item till the next full board meeting with the more comprehensive report. Is that a correct motion?
Yes, just say the exact date of the full board meeting, June 23rd, 2022.
Okay. We'll table the item till the next board meeting on June 23rd, 2022 with a more comprehensive report.
And yes, then I move the motion.
Thank you for that, Dr. Dikpash. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you for that, Mr. Mohamedov. I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dikpash.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohamedov.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to our committee members. The amended motion carries. So now we'll be moving on to recommended action item 2B, approval of the 2022-23 MPS master list of contracts for the 2022-23 fiscal year. This will be presented by Mr. Budraja, our Chief Financial Officer.
Okay. So these are basically the annual contracts that we have that exceed our current threshold that require board approval. These are things that are services that we provide, things like our insurance, our property and liability insurance, our healthcare coverage, contracts for services such as books, textbooks, things like McGraw-Hill. If you could please go to the list there, Jennifer. All of these expenses have been incorporated into the budget. And so these are just things that we have to approve each year. Our things like T-Mobile for our school sites, MetLife, our insurance, audit services, CharterSafe, 21st Century Staffing, which is a subservices contract. These are just annual contracts that we want to bring forward and allow you to see which vendors we contract out with that are included in the budget. I think this being a budget related piece, I wanted to share it with you. If you have any questions, obviously let me know. These are just regular services that we incorporate into our budget each year, and they're contracts that we approve and like to take to our board because of the dollar amount.
Sorry, does that conclude your presentation, Steve?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward, yes.
Okay, so with that, is there any questions or comments from the members of the public? If not, committee members, do you have any questions or comments regarding this item?
Yeah, I have a minor question. Was the threshold 90,000 or was it something lower? I remember some 50,000. Like, did we increase it?
Yeah, we updated our policies during the year, and so we aligned it with that of the county bid threshold, which is 90,000. So ours is currently 90,000. I believe the bidding threshold right now is 97 or 98. I don't recall the exact amount, but ours is currently 90,000. So these contracts exceed the $90,000 threshold.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments from the committee members? Perfect. If not, the motion is for the committee to approve the annual contracts for the 2023 fiscal year and for the recommends that the committee recommend and move that the board adopt the same. Would a committee member like to move the motion?
I'll move, Mekan.
Thank you, Mr. Mohammadov. Is there
a second?
Thank you, Dr. Dikpesh, for seconding. I'll take roll call vote. Dr. Dikpesh?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Mohammadov.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you to the committee members. The motion carries. And that concludes all of our items for today's meeting. At this moment, I ask Dr. Dikpesh if you may please adjourn. The time is 6:47 p.m.
Yes, it's June 21st, 2022. It's 6:47 p.m. I would like to adjourn the finance committee meeting.
Bye, everyone. See you at the next meeting.
Bye.
Hey, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Take care. Have a good evening.
Bye. I hope you get better soon, Alfredo.